Welcome to episode 38 of the Knitting Pretty podcast. My name is Em. You can find me online as Knit Fast, Die Cozy. Predominantly Ravelry and Instagram is where I'm hanging out these days. You can find show notes for the podcast at emmaknits.net, where I also keep my blog and knitting patterns. And then you can find a Facebook page at facebook.com/emmaknits. There's also an awesome Ravelry group at search Knitting Pretty podcast. I say that every time. Like, literally, I say this whole spiel every time, and yet every time I have to think about that, and then I'm confused. I don't even know. Hi. Welcome. Welcome to all of you guys. I hope that new listeners find something you like, and that all of you returning listeners continue to enjoy the podcast. Thank you so much for listening. I really, really enjoy having you all here with me. So, first of all, let's start off with a giveaway, because we finished the time period for the giveaway for the Fiberlicious Kickstarter, and it's time to draw a prize. So we had 30 posts in the thread in the Ravelry group, which in the future, if there's more giveaways, that's where it's going to be. So you should join the Ravelry group. There are lots of lovely people and good chatter. It's lots of fun. Anyway, 30 entries. So I went to random.org and generated a number between number 2 and number 30, because that excludes my post at the beginning. And that gives us number 26, who is Loopaloo. She said that she would choose the knitter's gonna knit tea, because she'd use it to embarrass her family members while knitting in public. And I think that's an excellent choice. I also enjoy embarrassing family members while knitting in public. I believe the last time I tried to do that, I mean, my husband's kind of used to it by now, although if we're somewhere, like, not knitting appropriate, he will give me the eye. But the last time I really embarrassed someone was when I went to a sort of pub restaurant with my mom and my sister, and I pulled out my knitting. And to be fair, we were on the way home from a fiber show. I mean, it was a knitting kind of day. And my sister looked at it, she's, oh my god, are you going to do that in here? Yes, I am. So anyway, congratulations, Loopaloo. Contact me on Ravelry and I will hook you up with the gals from Fiberlicious. On a sad note, they did not make the funding for their Kickstarter. So I went to their Facebook page, which I will link in the show notes. And they are doing some more fundraising through Teespring, which is a t-shirt company that you have t-shirts printed and you have to get a certain number of them signed up for before they'll print. But the number is really low. It's like 3. So they are still doing the t-shirts. You still can get the t-shirts even if you don't, you wanted one but the Kickstarter didn't work out. So go check out their Facebook and they have it all linked there. They do have more of the Knitter's Gonna Knit t-shirts, which are cute, as well as some other really cute things. So check it out, support them if you'd like to, and yeah, good luck to you guys at Fiberlicious. I know that you can do this, and I think your yarn store is going to be awesome. Okay, let's get into the actual podcast now. As seems to be a trend, there is nothing in my past. I've not finished anything, so skip it. On to the next thing. In my present, my footy socks by Miriam L. Felton. I've got 2 rows left of the first sock, so I'm almost halfway done. And so far, I've really enjoyed the pattern. I am finding that I might have some fit. I'm not having any fish issues. Me and fish are good. Fit issues with the sock. I think maybe I incorporated a little bit too much negative ease, but I'm going to wait until it's done before I make any judgments, and I'm still going to make the second sock because if they turn out a little small, I can always give them to someone else. But the construction of the sock is really interesting, and they've been a fun knit, particularly with a self-striping yarn, because it kind of shows the construction a little bit more than a plain yarn would, because the stripes change color and kind of highlight where the short rows are going and stuff. So yeah, it's been a fun knit, and I've really enjoyed making them. Yeah, I think it's either I put in too much negative ease, which just means that the sock is tight, Or perhaps maybe my row gauge was a little shorter than expected, and that meant that the heel part of the sock wasn't quite as long as it should have been, again, causing the sock to be a little short. But we'll see. I haven't got it finished yet, so I can't really judge the fit until I can take it off the needles and put it on. It has, basically, you knit part of the sock, and then you knit some, just the bottom of the sock for a bit, and then you knit a heel, and then you do some jiggery-pokery to get the heel to cup the back of your foot, and then you do ribbing. And I added a little bit more in the way of the short rows that lift the heel over the back of your foot. And I think I'm going to add a little bit more ribbing as well. But other than that, I found it to be a great pattern, and I really want to see how these socks turn out. I've never made successful footy socks, so we'll see. I also was looking through the projects on Ravelry, and it looks like some of the more successful ones maybe knit the actual sort of foot of the sock a little bit longer, so I think next time I try them, I will try that as well, see how that changes things. The yarn I'm using for those is Knit Picks Felici in the Rustic Cabin colorway, which is working up awesomely. I really, really like it. It's a great colorway, and I've not had any problems with the yarn so far, which is cool. I have had problems with Knit Picks Felici having knots or just random striping errors and stuff in the past, but this ball seems to be perfect, so yay that. I could have claimed that this was finished, but I don't like to call anything finished until it is photographed and recorded in Ravelry. So, my Wool Gatherings BFL and Silk handspun project that was epic and enormous is mostly finished. They're sitting on my drying rack right now. They're almost dry. And I got so much yarn out of this. I don't know the yardage yet because I never count my yardage until after I have fully dried the yarn. I find that it's unpredictable how much length you'll lose, that is, when you wash your hand spun, and so I like to just count it all up afterwards. But the yarn is, it looks awesome. It's about heavy lace weight to light fingering weight. It's fairly consistent throughout. There are some thick spots and some thin spots, as is to be expected, but nothing particularly egregious. And I have, well, it's 16 ounces, so a pound of handspun in 4 skeins with a little extra 5th skein. I was able to use all but the tiniest little bit of my singles when I plied the first skein, which I was complaining about last week, that I had to use my jumbo bobbin and it was really slow and miserable. Once that was done, I had a little bit of singles left over, or it seemed like a little bit, but it was actually quite a lot. And so I wound that off of the bobbin onto my ball winder. And because the singles had been resting for so long, because this project took months to do, the singles weren't too springy or energized. They weren't trying to twist up on themselves. So it was okay just sitting in a ball by itself. And then when I finished the second set of skeins, the other 2 braids of fiber worth of singles, I happened to have quite a bit left over in the other of the 2 colors that I was plying together. And so it all worked out rather serendipitously. And I think I ended up losing maybe 5 to 10 yards of singles at most, probably less, and lace weight singles, so like nothing, really nothing. And that's really exciting to me because I hate having little bits of singles left over at the end. It drives me nuts, and unfortunately it's just part of spinning. I mean, it happens pretty much every time you spin, so you know, I should just get used to disappointment, but whatever. Anyway, the fiber is Oatmeal, Blueface Luster, and Tussa Silk from Wool Gatherings. I'll link the shop in the show notes. It was a joy to spin, even if the project did go on a little bit longer than I would have liked. The colorways are not named, and they're not repeatable. They're just, she does what she does, and you get it while it's there. But both of them were sort of warm Spice Road kind of colors, and together, applied together, the overall effect is of a sort of a paprika color. But there's purples and golds and blacks and reds and oranges all in there together. So they look really cool. And I'm really excited. And as soon as they're dry, I'll start counting yardage. And then there will be pictures on Instagram. And I'll put a picture up when I claim it as finished on the next podcast. So stay tuned for the yardage on that giant ass spin. I've also been working on a third project, a new project, that I'm enjoying very much. It's a woven blanket that I'm making out of some bulky weight superwash merino that I dyed myself. It was something that I bought for my shop, but then ended up not... I bought it for a custom order and sold those skeins and then kept the rest. And I'm making it for my sister. I promised her a housewarming gift for her new house. Not this past Christmas, but the one before. And here I am, making it. Yay me for being speedy about that. Anyway, it's been a fun project so far. I'm weaving three panels and then they'll get knit together. If you don't know what I mean by that, it's okay, because I haven't done it before either, so we'll see how it all goes. It's based off of a pattern from a book called Kismet by Hill Country Weavers, and the pattern is called Serendipity. Basically, you weave the panels, and then you pick up stitches along the edges, and you knit a little bit, and then you do a three-needle bind-off between each panel, and then knit a border on it. We'll see how it goes. I think it's going to be okay. I'm at the point now where the panels are woven, and I serged off the ends, so all like they're not going to fray. And now I am getting ready to do a gauge swatch to make sure I pick up the right number of stitches on them. We'll talk more about the weaving experience in the show and tell segment, because I finally did some weaving. And yeah, I haven't worked on my Even Star this week. I was too excited by the weaving. I worked on those three things. So there you go. My future. I have really fallen in love with a pattern called the Sail Shawl. And it is by a friend of mine, Lisa Nieminen, and I'm sorry if I just killed your name. I have never heard it out loud before, so yay that. I'm so bad at pronouncing names, and I really try, but my secret is that if I do get a name right, it's probably because I have Googled, you know, whatever name pronunciation and tried to figure it out from there. Because just naturally, I drawl through it in my Pacific Northwest accent, and it all sounds terribly blah. So anyway, enough of that. I was trying to talk about this shawl. Stay on topic. The shawl is a color-blocked triangular shawl that looks like it's worked on a bias with short row shaping or something to give triangular color blocks. And it's meant to evoke sails, like sailboat sails, and it really does. It's great. And it's done as pattern support for Sweet Georgia Yarns. And the colors in the shawl in the sample are spectacular. They are like a really rich pinkish red and a warm peachy color and a gray and something else. Anyway, gorgeous. Gorgeous colors together. And what I really like about this shawl is it's done in garter stitch, so it's kind of mindless knitting, but it also has the interest of the shaping and the color blocking to keep you busy. And it uses up a bunch of yarn, so you can, if you are, like myself, a collector of single skeins of yarn, you can find three skeins that work well together in your stash and use them together and make one thing and not have to have them in your stash anymore. Which I think is a great thing. It's really, really cute, and I really want to make it because I think it would be a lot of fun to play with color combinations and to also work with the sort of sail theme. I have kind of a notion to make it in the colors of the spinnaker on my dad's boat, but maybe not because I don't think I'd ever wear them. But it would be sort of a... sort of nostalgic look. I mean, not look. It would be a nostalgic project for me. But that would be in a sort of goldenrod yellow and red and white. And, yeah, not the most wearable colors for me. You know, if I added blue in, I'd have a kindergarten classroom, you know? So maybe not that, but it just, part of me wants to do that. But I think you could do some really cute things with this shawl, so go check it out, because it's awesome. I have a second pattern that I wanted to talk about, which, well, I'm putting it in the future segment because that's when I talk about patterns I like. I don't know if I'll make it, but if I'm ever feeling like I'm up for a slightly fiddly project that looks awesome when it's done, I will make it then. It's called Woven Friends, and it's by Kimberly Gintar or something like that. It will be linked in the show notes. You can find it there. Or if you are friends with me on Ravelry or just see me there, you can look in my favorites. Generally, if I talk about something in the future segment of the podcast, it'll either be in my favorites or in my queue. And you can check that out there. So Woven Friends is a shawl. And it's done in a really pretty pink color, which is part of what drew me to it. But it's not really a crescent shawl, but it's not quite a half circle either. It's kind of a flattened half circle. And it's got a lace edging and just a more simple middle. But between the lace edging, which is a really pretty one, by the way, like really pretty, and the, I think it's garter stitch or something, base foundation, it has a woven panel. And what she does to create it, there's all these pictures of it, so you can see on the projects, is knit all these little tassels. You just knit like a bajillion 3-inch long little bits of stockinette, and then you lay it out and you weave them all together, you know, under over, weave them into this basket weave, and then you pick up stitches along all of them and get knitting again. And it looks so cool. Because it's got this section in it that is completely impossible, as far as I can see, to knit. And so it looks out of place, but it's also really neat looking, and oh, it's so cool. It's a really, really cool pattern, and I don't have the patience for it right now. But I tucked it away in my favorites in case that happens, that I do have the patience, and then I'm knitting the crap out of it, because it's so cool. Like, I've just never seen anything like that. There are a couple patterns that manipulate the fabric that way. You know, knitting strips and then braiding them together. And they're all very well, but a lot of them, it seems like the entire design is worked just around being able to use the technique, and it doesn't always fit in as well, or it's on part of a sweater that would be too bulky, something like that. But this just works perfectly with the shawl, and it's gorgeous. Go check it out. You'll like it. You might not want to knit it because it seems like a lot of work, but I think you'll think it's cool. On to the show and tell segment. So as I was saying, I was weaving. And the reason I got around to weaving and spending so much time with my loom was because I finally got the stand for my Ashford Knitters loom. And it has made all the difference. So I wanted to talk a little bit about rigid heddle weaving from a knitter and basically from a not a weaver's perspective. And about my loom and what I have for it as far as accessories. Just in case you are interested in weaving and you wanted some kind of ideas about it. So, rigid heddle weaving is one of the simplest ways of using a loom. There's no complication to it. There's no pedals to step on to raise the different reeds in different ways. It's just a loom that has the front bar and the back bar, which is what your warp is attached to. The warp is what goes longwise in the fabric. And it works so that you can wind a long length of warp onto the back bar and then slowly weave it onto the front bar. So you can get quite a significant length of fabric. But it's not that wide. Mine's a 20-inch wide loom, and it also comes in a 12 and I believe a 7 or an 8-inch wide version. And So between the front and the back bar where the warp is woven on, you pass the warp through this rigid heddle. It's a plastic and wood bit with holes in it. And that heddle is used both for creating the shed in the warp that you pass the weft back and forth through, and for beating the weft down when you weave. And I admit, I'll be the first to admit, I don't really know weaving terminology yet. I can talk knitting jargon until your ears fall off, but weaving, I'm like, I don't know what all that means. And so if I sound like a total noob, that's because I am. Fair enough. But yeah, so it's a very simple process. There's not a whole lot to it. You just pass the yarn across, and then you beat, and then you change the heddle downwards, and then you pass the yarn across, and then you beat, and then you change the heddle upwards, and so on and so forth, until it's done. And so the loom I have is the Ashford Knitters loom. Schacht makes the Cricut, and I think there's a Becca Harp, maybe, is another rigid heddle loom. There are a couple different rigid heddle looms on the market. The Ashford Knitters loom is a little bit more expensive than some of them, but it has the virtue of folding in half, although some of the other ones do too. And that means you can store it away easily. So it's not like a big floor loom that needs its own bedroom, which, by the way, when I told my husband I had decided I was getting a loom, he looked like he was going to pass out, because the only loom he had ever seen was at a house that he was measuring. That's what he does. He measures people's houses. Unusual job, I know. But anyway, this loom had its own bedroom and filled the entire room. And that's what he thought I meant, because I was like, I had just put my foot down. I'm getting this thing. And yeah, his eyes kind of bugged out of his head. But no, the knitter's loom is little. It folds up. It used to sit down the side of my couch. But now that I have a stand, which is one of the accessories for it, it's out and open all the time, and then it does take up more space that way. So the knitter's loom has quite a lot of accessories you can buy for it. You can buy different sized reeds to work with different sized yarns. You can buy a second heddle kit, which replaces the block that the heddle sits in, that supports it when you're either moving it up or down, so that it can hold two heddles. And I do have that as well, although I haven't put it on the loom yet. And that's a shame. I should really do that. I'm, in fact, looking forward to doing that soon. And it also has the option of a stand. If you don't have the stand, you basically rest the loom against a table edge and against your lap and work in your lap. I found that for me, that wasn't terribly ergonomic. I'm not really sure why, but it just gave me a backache, basically. With the stand, there's less requirement to smush it between your body and the table to keep it from moving around. It's just a little bit more comfortable. And that has changed for me weaving on this loom. Before, I found it kind of annoying. Like, I really like the product. I like the experience of using it. I like using up my stash really quickly. All of that was great. But just the experience of weaving in some ways left a bit to be desired. It left me with a kind of a sore back. It was just not perfect. So also direct warping it, which is basically you create the warp lengths on the loom. You actually attach it to the back bar as you are winding out the warp. Basically, in my house, I had nowhere without the stand that I could anchor the loom down. I didn't have a table that was somewhere far enough away from where I could hook up a warping peg to get a long warp, and so I was finding it was limiting what my projects could be. But now that I have the stand, I can set it up to warp pretty much anywhere, and that makes a lot more opportunity for different projects. So if you're looking at trying out a knitter's loom, I strongly recommend trying it with the stand. I think it is much more fun that way. Also, I found when I was putting on the stand, I thought it would be an annoying big process that would require a bunch of work. It's not. Ashford is clever. They make their projects like, you know, it's like assembling IKEA furniture, but better. you just take off some knobs and put on some washers and plop it in, basically. Like, it's very easy to assemble the stand and set the loom up on it. And then I had also thought the second heddle kit was a lot of fuss, and that's one of the reasons I hadn't bothered doing it. I thought I'd have to, you know, put holes in my loom or something. And so after putting this stand together and it was so easy, I thought, I'll check out the second heddle kit. And yeah, super easy. You just kind of take off one and put on the other. So kudos to Ashford for making an easy project to assemble. I really like that. So overall, I absolutely recommend trying weaving. If you want to try it and you're not necessarily sure you want to commit to it, you might have a local yarn store that will rent you a loom. I know one of my local yarn stores will do that, which is awesome. And of the people I know who have rented looms from them, they've all ended up buying them because it's so much fun. But yeah, check out that. See if there's somebody you can rent one from. If not, check out your local guild or a local Ravelry group. There might be somebody who is willing to rent out a loom to you. I have found that weavers, rather like knitters, are evangelists. They like to bring people into their craft. What more can I say about the knitter's loom? Not much. It's such a simple thing that there's nothing much to say about it, but that doesn't mean it's not good. It's just, it's a very simple machine, you know? And anyone can do it. Kids can weave. You can weave if you're having, you know, arthritis problems. Like, it's a lot less complicated than something like knitting, but it still uses yarn. And one of the great things about weaving, one of the reasons I ended up with a loom in the first place, is it will use up yarn faster than you might be able to knit it or crochet it. And that's great for me because I don't like it when my stash gets too big, and I like to work the stash down every once in a while, just a bit. I've been trying for 2 years to work it down right now. It's not going too well. I keep buying things. But you can have a scarf warped and woven in a day or two, like a fingering weight scarf. I dare you to try and knit a fingering weight scarf in 2 days. Don't hurt yourself. I don't actually dare you. Don't do that. Your hands will fall off. But anyway, it works up quickly, and it gives you a whole lot of new opportunities for things you can make that a knitted fabric wouldn't do. And I have done a couple things with my woven fabric. I made a case for my Kindle with it. I basically made the fabric and then decided on size and cut and used my sewing machine to sew the fabric. It was very easy. It was very cool. I made a cowl this Christmas for my sister-in-law by taking the woven fabric and crocheting it together. I've made scarves. I've made table runners. There are lots of things. And so the thing I'm working on right now that I talked about in the present section of the podcast, the blanket, I would definitely suggest trying to get a look at this Kismet book by Hill Country Weavers. Even if you just look at the projects, for me it's more of an inspiration book. I've made a couple of the things out of it, but it's always been more as like, I looked at the pictures, I looked at the techniques, I read the pattern, and then I just kind of did it my own way because I didn't have the right size yarn or whatever. But it's a really good inspiration book for those of us who are primarily knitters or crocheters who want to weave and want to work all of our crafts together at the same time. So this blanket uses knitting and weaving together with a little bit of sewing. The cowl that I was just talking about is also from that book, and it uses weaving and a little bit of sewing just to tidy off the ends and then crochet. So there's lots of patterns in there that use multiple crafts, and it's really neat. I like it a lot. Another book I would suggest if you're interested in rigid heddle weaving and you're interested in taking it a little bit further than just making a plain weave scarf is The Weaver's Idea Book by Jane Patrick. I haven't employed too many of the patterns yet, but I've read it through, and it's just a really interesting book. It's written in a way that's really readable, and it's got everything you could want to know about doing cool things with your rigid heddle loom. Some people talk about rigid heddle looms being very limited in what they can do, and between this Kismet book for inspiration on projects and the Weaver's Idea book for patterns and drafts and how-tos, just getting you started, getting you taking it to the next level, you will realize that there's so much you can do with a rigid heddle loom, even one that's only 12 or 20 inches wide that can make, you know, way less fabric than a big proper loom. There's so much you can do. And so, yeah, that thus far is my experience with weaving. I am really looking forward to doing more now. Now that I have my stand, now that I can put that second heddle kit on, I have a table runner kind of thing in mind for not a bookshelf. It's a sideboard kind of thing that I use to store our board games in our dining room, and unfortunately, when I got it, it was a piece of furniture that my parents were getting rid of, and so I decided to take it because it's, you know, nice, looks like teak veneer, I think. But I didn't have anywhere to put it, and I didn't really want it, I just didn't want them to get rid of it because I kind of liked it. And so I put it in my sunroom and put plants on it. Did the potted plants ruin the finish on the top? Yes, they did. Can I fix it? No, not really. So I'm going to weave a runner to go on the top of that. I am looking forward to the day when the cat decides to jump up on the runner and slides the whole way down and off the end of the sideboard. But, you know, we'll deal with that when we get there. I'm planning on weaving it in some Noro silk garden sock. I think it's going to be gorgeous. So, yeah. Check out weaving. If you want to try and take your yarn crafts in a new direction, check it out. It's really, really cool. The thing that convinced me to try it out was it was a review on Knitty Spin, or just plain Knitty. I don't remember when. Right before I got my loom. So probably 2 years ago. Anyway, I'll link that in the show notes. But it was a really positive review of this knitter's loom. And basically when I saw it, I knew I had to do it. I would also strongly recommend checking out the Rigid Heddle Weaving group on Ravelry. There is a finished object thread that is like the coolest thing ever. There's so many projects and so much talent in there. Everything from people trying out their very first weaving and just being excited because it's working, to people who are really experimental and do really cool patterns with multiple heddles and pickup sticks. Everything. So, there you go. That is a very disjointed review-ish thing of the knitter's loom and the weaving experience. Go try it. So, obsessions. My first obsession this week is the spring cleaning purge. I can't be the only one who does this. I don't really like spring cleaning. I admit, I don't have this whole, like, plan where I go through and, you know, dust the things that don't normally get dusted and clean the things that I forget about all the rest of the year. I just kind of get antsy for a cleaner house in the spring. It's not a formalized thing. I just kind of clean. One thing that I do find that I seem to keep doing each year is purging crap from the house. This year, the main thing that I've been clearing out is clothing. My size has changed a lot in the past couple months, and I intend to keep it changing in a downwards direction. And so what that has meant is that all of my much-loved clothes are getting kind of baggy, and that makes me sad because, well, I love my clothes. I worked hard to pick nice ones and make them and all that good stuff. But it's time to purge out the ones that don't fit. So I am doing that. I got 3 garbage bags of clothes out today, and I don't mean like big black garbage bags. I mean like little kitchen garbage bags, but still, that's a lot of clothes, damn it. I have been trying to come to terms with what it means to not intend to be the size I was again, and what that means for my knitted sweaters. I very, very sadly but determinedly put them to rest. I have reclaimed a couple buttons from cardigans with... I like buttons. I pick good buttons. So I've reclaimed some of those, and the cardigans themselves will go off to the thrift store. I figure... At first I was thinking of trying to find homes for the sweaters and stuff, but I'd like them to go to the thrift store and have somebody who wouldn't normally have a hand-knitted sweater be able to buy one. And yeah, I think they'll find good homes. So, and if they don't, so they don't. It's not my problem anymore, right? So yeah, I've just been kind of calmly accepting that my hand knits and my hand sewn things, I have, you know, a dress that I only got to wear once, that kind of stuff, they will go to new homes and people will appreciate them, and somebody else who, you know, maybe had a hard time finding something that fit right will find this dress and they'll just happen to be the right size and it'll be perfect for them, and that'll be exciting. So yeah, the other things I need to get rid of, I need to go through my books. Our book collection is a bit much. And I need to go through everything. Ugh. How does stuff collect? Like, I swear I don't bring that much stuff into the house. And yet it still just builds. It's like it multiplies on its own. Which would all be very well if it was all yarn. But some of it's like bits of paper that for some reason I was storing. So yeah. Spring cleaning purge. It's on. The thrift store is getting so much stuff. A whole set of dishes. Unless, if you live in Victoria and you notify me by, like, 2 days from now that you want some dishes, I have some black dishes. But other than that, they're going. Check Value Village. Or wherever else I decide to donate them. I haven't thought about it yet. But, yeah. Dishes. Bowls. Knits. Clothes, all the things. I need to go through my kid's clothes again and see what she's grown out of. Why do they grow so fast? Ugh. Anyway. My second obsession is that my pets have fleas and they won't go away. And that's not really a fun obsession, it's a fairly negative obsession, but oh my god. I can't get rid of them. I've been trying, and I've done all these things, and they're not going away. I put advantage on the dog and the fleas didn't die. What the hell, fleas? Like, seriously. I'm not okay with this. So, I am going to put advantage on the cat as well. Because you gotta do that. And yeah, you know, if you have multiple pets, even though only one of them goes outside, they both have fleas. If one of them has fleas, they both have fleas. So... Yes, I need to put advantage on the cat, and then I need to get both of the pets and all the people out of the house, and I need to spray the house with flea spray. If you are trying to get rid of fleas, I have found that, like, I've heard lots of good reports about diatomaceous earth. For our house, I just don't think that would work. We've got so, like, because we've got carpet, that is a situation where it would work, but we've got so much space, we'd have to... Like, the pets have free reign of the whole house. It would be an epic undertaking to cover every carpet in the house with diatomaceous earth. So, that's just a no-go, basically. But there is a spray that you can buy at a vet. It's called Vet Chem. It's Sifitrol is the chemical, and it is very effective in killing fleas. I've had really good success with it, and it doesn't have the same... disruption on your life as like a flea bomb where you have to get everybody out and then you set the thing and then you leave for 8 hours. I believe it's 4 hours that it recommends you be out of the house, and it's just a aerosol can that you spray with. So yeah, if you happen to have fleas, look into Vet Chem, provided that you're comfortable using, you know, insecticides in your house. It really does work. But I say this and then I'm like, ah, but I still have fleas. It's because I haven't been able to treat both the cat and the dog. I need to buy some advantage for the cat. Why is flea treatment so expensive? Ugh. On the bright side, the dog's been getting lots of walks and picking up fleas in happy little tufts of grass, and I'm sure that's been nice for him. But, yeah, gross. My third and final obsession is capsule wardrobes. And that ties in sort of to the fact that I keep having to get rid of my clothes. Is that I'm going to need new clothes at some point. Like, nudity's all very well, but I get cold. And so I need to find a way to continue being well-dressed, because I find that dressing well really raises my self-esteem, and that is something I realized over the past year or two, that if I dress and put some effort into it, particularly if I wear a dress or, you know, a nicer outfit, like I make sure I'm not just wearing jeans and a hoodie every day. Not that there's anything wrong with jeans and a hoodie. I wore jeans and a hoodie all week and today. So jeans and hoodies are awesome. But I really find that my self-esteem is increased if I dress up a little bit more. But I'm not made of money. And because I am a stay-at-home mom, it's not like I have a job to go to where I need career wear. So it's really hard to justify spending a whole bunch of money on a bunch of clothes that I very much intend to size myself out of again. And so I was kind of moping about this because, you know, I'm a miser, I don't like spending my money, and I don't like spending my money on things I won't use forever. And I also don't like looking sloppy and baggy. And so I was just like, what am I going to do? And then I can't remember where I found it, but I found the concept of the capsule wardrobe, which is taking a fairly small number of clothing items and accessories and making sure that they can all be mixed and matched together to make a vastly higher number of outfits between all of them. And so I searched it on Pinterest. And like I always say about Pinterest, it's completely crap unless you use it right, and then it can be pretty awesome. And I found lots of templates for creating capsule wardrobes that would turn, say, 15 items of clothes into 30 outfits, or there was another that would take 16 items into 40 outfits. And the great thing about that is it's cheaper, it doesn't take up as much space, but also it means that no matter what you do, no matter what you put on in the morning, they go together. If you've created this very specific, very carefully chosen wardrobe that everything matches, you're never going to have the problem of putting on clothes and then looking in the mirror and thinking, what the hell was I thinking? Because they all go together. And so I've got this sort of desire to create a capsule wardrobe with my next clothing purchases. I don't know if it's entirely possible for me, partly because I do still have clothes that I fit and I want to keep using them, and they're not necessarily going to incorporate well with the stuff that's available in stores right now, etc. But I'm going to try and keep in mind what I have and try and work in what I buy with what I already have and see if I can create a wardrobe where all the pieces work together. Because I think that would be really cool. Just to try it. And who knows, maybe I'll hate it, but maybe I'll really enjoy it and it'll be something that I carry forward. Because in the past, I've just been a more is better kind of clothing person. You know, I think when I discovered that I liked wearing dresses, I went from owning one dress, which was a bridesmaid's dress that I hate and no longer own, to owning 15 dresses in the space of like 6 months. So, you know, once I find out I like something, I tend to get into it. And so it would be a very different approach for me, but I think it'd be cool. I would love to hear if you guys have tried it and had any success with the idea of a capsule wardrobe. And, or if you've not had success, I would also like to learn about not success, because that's important too. So, I think that is it for this week. You should go and join the Ravelry group and come chat in the episode threads, because we've had a little bit more chatter there lately, and it's been a lot of fun. I've really been enjoying kind of getting to know you guys and having, you know, a fun group with cool people in it. All people in the group are cool, it is known. So yeah, until next week, have a wonderful time. Spend time with people you love and with yarn that you love. Happy knitting.